Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, my friends. This is Mickey Desai, your host for this episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. This particular episode is something of an experiment. I had the pleasure of listening to a session hosted by Rainmaker Consulting out of Massachusetts. The session was called Strengthening a Culture of Philanthropy in Times Like These. This group was invited to gather virtually, share best practices, and address the challenging times we find ourselves in. I think you'll find there's lots of good information and valuable inspiration within, and I share with you this session in its entirety.
Enjoy. There are so many years and decades, hundreds and hundreds of years of experience and expertise and passion for fundraising on this call. And so we recognize your all that you bring to the table. And so we're not here to tell you what to do. We're here to create a space for us to share our experiences and wisdom with each other, because nothing inspires collaboration and sharing like a crisis. This is a space to pause and to remember that you've got this and that we're in this together. And the Rainmaker team is in it with you also. So we're holding this as a space to crowdsource best ideas, to share ideas and solutions that you've seen. We are not going to go into the best practices of fundraising. You already know that. And we all know that best practices in development don't really change because there's a crisis. But there are many ways that we're approaching things differently than we ordinarily would. Many things that we're pausing, postponing, changing, bringing to the foreground during this time of the coronavirus. So there are numerous resources available about how nonprofits can respond to this. There are state and federal resources and funding opportunities. This webinar is not about that. At Rainmaker, we always lead from a culture philanthropy framework, and it's a mindset that you'll be hearing throughout this session. So what you will not be getting is a crash course in how to build a culture of philanthropy in your organization. For that, we have another course coming up in October. Basically, what we're looking at today is what it means to see, hear, and perform within a culture of philanthropy mindset is that everyone, and we mean everyone on your team, from frontline staff to board members to senior leadership, everyone to donors and volunteers is part of the solution. And we're going to jump right into that. So with that, I'm going to introduce Lori Herrick, who is the founder and president of Rainmaker Consulting, and she'll take it from here.
Great. Thank you, Beth. You said it all, and really it's true. It is really quite unusual times. And so our purpose has evolved, and this is what we're intending to do today. Our purpose and intended result is to have clear ideas of how you can strengthen your organization now in the mindset of a crisis, in the midst of a crisis, not a mindset, with the foundations and practices of a culture of philanthropy. And it's the idea is to help you reframe and get back into action. And here's the agenda that we'll be using today. So we've already done a little piece of the welcome and gone over the agenda. I'm going to go into specifics on the technology. We're going to do introductions of both the Rainmakers and all of you in a really kind of interesting way, I think. We'll see how that works out. We're going to set the context for this session, talk about why and how we're going to frame all of this, and dig into a bit about what a culture of philanthropy is and some best practices. Here are the best practices from the field. We really want to hear from you about some of the things that you are doing. And then we're going to specifically work on, so now what do we go, where do we go from here? What are the takeaways? What's next? What are you going to take on? And we have a Q&A at the end, and I say optional because we know that some people will be more interested in that than others. And it's a chance to really get into the nitty gritty. A couple of really important details that I just want to mention. This session is being recorded. Let's make sure we got that record button going. And we, in addition to that, we've agreed to share this recording with nonprofit Snapcast, and they're going to be airing it in a podcast. We're really excited about it. As we said, when you registered by participating in this, you're agreeing to be recorded. So if you have something brilliant to say, please say it. We hope that you're going to share and ask questions and participate fully to make it engaging for everybody. Now on to the introductions. I want to start with the Rainmakers. You've heard a little from Beth and from me. Perhaps, Eric, would you like to say hello to everybody?
Good morning, everybody. I'm Eric Phelps. I'm a principal with Rainmaker Consulting. We're delighted you're here and look forward to the conversations we're going to have today.
Great. Thanks, Eric. And how about David Sharkin?
Morning. Excuse me. Good morning, everybody. I am isolating not unpleasantly in Wellfleet Cape Cod. So I'm glad you're here. Glad that we can come together to share some good ideas in these very strange times. Welcome.
Thanks, David. And by the way, I heard this morning they might be closing the bridge, so you might be stuck on the Cape. Things could be worse, right?
There's worse places.
We also have with us Kathleen Dowd and Christine Keneally. They're in the background. They're the ones that have been helping to make this happen. Christine, you want to go first and just say hello from your home?
Hi, everybody. It's so great to see you all and to be on this talk with you.
Great. Thanks, Christine. And Kathleen, where are you?
Good morning, everyone. Right here. And I'm so excited to have this happening. Welcome, everyone. So glad you're here.
So welcome, everyone. So I want to spend a couple of minutes right off the bat here, setting the context for this conversation of really looking at what our lives are like these days. By the way, this is the most beautiful picture rendering I could find of COVID-19 because I wanted us to kind of look at it from a slightly different perspective. We really are in challenging times, though. Some might say scary times or disorienting times. And fear is prevalent, and much of that fear is fear of the unknown. So I want to acknowledge that that's real. And while we're going to be looking at alternatives to fear, I don't want to diminish it or Pollyanna it, if you will. The virus is the real thing. It is like nothing we have ever experienced. These are truly challenging times. Building a culture of philanthropy is not about pretending that times aren't challenging. It's not just pretending that it's great. It's not wishing it away. Since 2002, at Rainmaker, we've been working on the culture of philanthropy framework. It's the air we breathe, and it impacts all of the work that we do. It's how we think. It's part of the strategic planning work, our fundraising work, our governance, and our board development work. And it not only is it useful when you're doing your long-term thinking, it's especially relevant now as we face coronavirus. So in this session, we're going to go back to basics, a reminder, if you will, of what we know best to keep us on track for building and supporting great organizations doing critical work in the world. It'll have the important twist of addressing times like these. If you haven't built and started to build a culture of philanthropy so far, don't worry about it. The best time to start is right now. And I hope that you'll find some very useful tools in this presentation. And if your agency is well on its way to building a culture of philanthropy, I'm sure there are going to be many tools here for you as well. So let's break down and talk about what we mean when we say culture of philanthropy, starting with the word philanthropy. So how do we define philanthropy? I'm going to cut to the chase because I know that probably for the, what do we have here, 57 people that are here today, we probably could come up with 57 different definitions for it. And very often what people think about first, they go to that 1%, those people that are super wealthy, that are, in the news all of the time. Well, while everyone is invited to the culture of philanthropy party, we mean everyone. We really mean that this definition, love of humankind. So it's the framework that really defines our work. It's the definition that we're going to be using. And as we go forward, you can assume whenever we use the word philanthropy, we mean love of humankind. Moving forward, what do we mean by culture? Well, culture too has a lot of different ways of looking at it. Peter Drucker, he said this, culture eats strategy for breakfast. He's making the point here that no matter what strategy you have in mind, if you haven't addressed the culture, you're overlooking what could be a major obstacle. I like to think about it as a fishbowl. It's like the fishbowl that we live in. It surrounds us, and it's difficult. It's like the water that surrounds us, I should say, or the air that surrounds us. We can't even see it. It's just part of everything around us every moment. And we're sort of blind to it in a certain way. Robert Gass and the Social Transformation Project offered this model, and I think it's very useful, especially now for building cultural philanthropy. And it's really, I think, a great structure for us to look at. So let's think about this through the lens of COVID, if you will. So talking about structures, you used to have a structure in your organization that dictated how people track their hours based on when they walked in the door. Now with COVID, you've had to establish a different structure. You may have established a new crisis committee on your board. How about behaviors? Before, we had hand washing, but now there's obsessive 20-minute hand washing while we're singing happy birthday twice as we do it. In your organization, you may have started having more frequent Zoom team meetings. That's a different kind of, another kind of behavior, right? Likewise, regarding hearts and minds. This includes our attitudes, our mindsets, our thoughts, and our feelings. In the past, we may have felt that you didn't have time, that you were too busy to stop and talk to your neighbors. During this crisis, we're a little more apt to take care of people. So these are all examples of culture change. So in a minute here, we're going to go into breakout rooms, and you're going to have a rainmaker in your room with you, and we're going to be talking about two different questions. So this is one of them. What are the challenges that you're currently facing? And then in a minute, we're going to switch, and the facilitator will do this, to what's something from your last 2 to 3 weeks that you're grateful for. So if you would, Kath, please take us into those.
Before you do that, Lori, let me, if I could, briefly interject. In terms of challenges, think back to that structure, behavior, hearts and minds, folks. So what are the challenges in your belief systems right now? What are your challenges in the structures that are changing on us? What are your challenges in the behavior that you and your staff or your agencies are facing? So keep in mind that lens as we're talking about challenges.
Great. Thanks, David.
Shall I jump in with a few of the themes from our breakout room?
That would be great, David.
Well, I think probably the number one theme is not a surprise, which is the uncertainty. Just literally not knowing if summer camp for hundreds and hundreds of kids is going to happen or not happen. Is the event or the campaign going to get back to normal or is it not? And how do we stay on mission when one of our mission, core parts of our mission is to stay together and to build community when we're supposed to be isolated? So I think that are some of the challenges. Obviously, the revenue hit, either directly or secondary hit or even a tertiary hit down the road, knowing that donors, businesses, others do not have necessarily the capacity that they used to even a few weeks ago. So I think that uncertainty, potential loss of income, actual loss of income. We did also hear a lot of gratitude, chock full of gratitude. So,
what was some of the gratitude that showed up, David?
I would say the gratitude of surprise donations that came in. Mm-hmm. There was a gratitude of action from board members. The possibility of reaching out to others to share your mission when you weren't able to do that before. A group that works with dogs, there's nothing better on Zoom than a cute dog. So, and one thing that the Environmental Center out in northern Wisconsin didn't talk about, but if people are now walking and outside a lot more, they might actually be more open to that bird walk or the bird, the nature education. So being able to pivot where your mission might fit now even better when it than it did before.
Great. Thank you, David. Eric, how about in your room, any highlights? And if we could do it briefly, that would be great so we can keep moving it along too. Take yourself off mute. Yep.
Sure. So we heard lots of challenges, of course, around disruption. I think disruption of fundraising events, disruption of program, closing offices. And we heard a lot of challenges around that. In one case, an event that brings in 50% of revenue for the year. So, and I guess the uncertainty of rescheduling those. So they've been rescheduled or thought about in terms of, hey, we're going to do it in September, but is that going to be enough and how will we plan? So that was one. Lots of gratitude. Some support from family was one. And there were others about just being grateful that people had great teams. And Susan, I'm not going to call on you, but I'm going to share that an employer actually sent out a pulse survey, it's called, where you ask how people are doing anonymously. And she was saying it wasn't just about how can I do my work better, but how am I doing? How, am I okay? Do I have income or health concerns? So I think that was a good example of how organizations' culture can also be reflective in how they work with and treat employees and share support.
Great. Thank you, Eric. Anything, Christine, from your room that you want to share with us?
We had a lot of the same things come up in our group, too, about sharing, changing the culture around large events, cash flow concerns, loss of social meeting space because the library is closed. Looking forward to wondering how they can sustain the organization for the future and be one of the ones that survive through this. Shoshana, I'll just paraphrase what you were saying, that one organization that does puppet shows, providing their shows for free to everybody because that's what they want to do and it feels important, but at the same time trying to know how they can sustain the organization and how to think about monetizing in this culture. And lots of gratitude. Gratitude for people in Italy sharing music across the balconies. Gratitude for being near the woods and being able to get out in nature and see spring. Gratitude for staff and faculty keeping things going somehow with all the big changes. And being brave with technology when maybe it's not their forte. There were a lot of resources shared. And we thought that maybe at the end, we might invite people to share resources with the whole group.
That's great.
So we can all think about that too.
That's great. I'm going to have on, even though I know there were some great shares in the other rooms, but for the purpose of keeping us moving forward, I'm going to have us move on. So thank you everybody for sharing and looking at how it is in both the challenging times and how to be grateful despite that. In Sunday's New York Times, there was an editorial by David Brooks called "The Moral Meaning of the Plague." He quotes Viktor Frankl in this. He wrote profound passages about his experience as a Holocaust survivor. The quote is, "We don't get to choose our difficulties, but we do have the freedom to select our responses." And I think that's an amazing quote, and especially profound to imagine selecting your response, if you will, if you're a Holocaust survivor. I think it's a pretty amazing thing to imagine. And so I throw out to you this question. If tomorrow the virus was completely contained, and we were told that we could go back to business as usual, what, if anything, will we wish we had done differently? And I think that it's an important thing to try to step back. You know, I had a moment of thinking about that where I thought, there's a level I'd be sort of disappointed that I don't have as much time to be in my own home or that I don't have time with my family. When the worst of this epidemic has passed, what will prevail are the ideas that are brought forth by those people that are taking a stand and that they're standing for something great, for a new way of being, hearts and minds, if you will, and new ways of doing things, those structures and behaviors. And so I hope that that makes sense to you and has you understand that kind of in the core, what we have to do is start with ourselves, right? That's where change is going to come within our organizations. So for every single one of us that's on this call, we're at 56 people at this point. If we want to build strong organizations, we have to start from the inside and work out. I don't know about you, but there are moments in the last month that I was not up for leading. I experienced fear, and I needed to stop and pause and come up with a more positive narrative. We all need to do this periodically. And it isn't useful to try to lead from fear or from smallness. We need to rise above our fears. So I'm going to start with you, yourself, as a source of culture, I want to start with yourself or ourselves as a source of a culture of philanthropy. If every day we're bombarded with scary messages and we keep hearing about rising death toll, how in the heck do we try to lead from possibility? Yourself into a mindset of possibility. And when faced with fear, or as Viktor Frankl says, select our responses. So I'm going to hand this to David, and he's going to lead us through a little bit of an exercise, a little bit of a reflective exercise, if you will. So David, if you would take yourself off mute and start.
Well, starting from the core, and thinking about this wheel of change, what is it that you could be changing in terms of your behavior? So for instance, if you normally exercise way too much, maybe this is a time to be still. If you're normally very still, maybe it's a time to exercise more. Structure, you know, what are the things that you're doing to shift in this time, again, towards a culture that you are wanting? The same thing with your beliefs and your feelings. So think about the possibilities in your life. Take a moment. I think we're going to do this not necessarily as a full in breakout rooms, but pause for a second. Perhaps write it down on a piece of paper, or even offer it in a chat. What are the things that you yourself are doing to be centered and to shift that culture towards the broader philanthropy that we're seeking? Okay, I'm going to ask you to think about it a little more. What could I do? I have one suggestion, is meditating daily. My personal one is to pick a different friend from perhaps way back that I haven't talked to in decades, and just picking up the phone. I'm getting a lot from that. Planting an herb in a veggie garden.
Yeah.
Playing guitar. That's a good one. Spending time with kids outside. Only checking social media and the news a few times a day instead of constantly. That's a good one. Intentionally volunteering in the community in ways that you can. Cooking for the family. Great suggestions. Thank you for taking the time and sharing. Lori, I'll pass it back to you.
Great. Can you hear me? I want to make sure I'm not on mute. Okay, good. So here are a few things that we came up with, and I'm going to move through these quickly. Some of the things that you noted are included in this. But, you know, to look at various things that center you, whether it's walking or getting outdoors, as David said, maybe, you know, exercising more, or maybe you need to be still. To come up with those things that are really useful and positive, here are three different things. On the left, this is Reasons to be Cheerful, which is a wonderful blog. David Byrne from Talking Heads writes it and has awesome things in there that are reinforcing good things. The story of telling is particularly good. I loved one of the stories, by the way. This is the source of the story of why elders can get into grocery stores early. And this originated with a single person that was a grocery store owner in Australia and now has become, you know, really a part of our culture. This also, Yes Magazine is fantastic, has all sorts of great things that are going on in it. The other is to think about, you know, when you hear something negative, are you repeating it? Are you the one that's generating more angst? If you need to vent, which, you know, the truth is we're human and we do have moments that we're really frustrated, find somebody that you can vent to who's not going to take you very seriously, and then see what you can do to let it go. And speaking of the repetition of stories, David, would you mind reading this out loud for us, just to have somebody do that for us?
Sure. This is from Seth Godin. It's not difficult to maintain a gray cloud and a sullen outlook. The event is long over, but the story remains. A proven approach is to keep repeating the narrative that led us deeper into this memory hole. As with a missing tooth, we probe that spot over and over, examining it from all angles again and again in order to keep the story fresh. On the other hand, forgotten stories have little power. So the same approach works for feeling of optimism and possibilities. Repeat, repeat, repeat the positive stories, the good fortune, the generosity. What happens to us matters a great deal. But even more powerful are the stories that we repeat about what happened.
Great. Thanks, David. And so really, it's about repeating that which works and sharing the good news that is working, and to be the possibilitarian. And I don't mean Pollyanna. I just mean keep looking for what is really possible out there. Also, you know, attempt a sense of humor. Now, some people see this and don't find it very funny. I found it hilarious. So, you know, there's things that you'll find humorous and other people won't find humorous. I actually made a group of people listen to this, and they said that they lost 2 perfectly good minutes of their life having to listen to this stupid thing. I found it funny. So find what makes you smile. And this is a bit of a summary of the things that we've just said here in terms of yourself.
Okay. This is Beth. I just wanted to chime in for a moment here.
Sure.
And so one of the things that I appreciate about this approach is, yes, we are living in a time of great challenge and difficulty, and we're being asked to step up and respond in new and different ways. And there are many things to be grateful for. So staying in that place of possibility, but also understanding that it is all true. It is not all challenge. It is not all gratitude. And that place where we can acknowledge this is all true, and allows us to come from even greater possibility.
Yeah, and I'll even give a twist on that and say it's all true and it's all made up, right? And so part of it is, as Viktor Frankl said, we also get to choose our response. So, you know, it's a big deal looking at where we're going to come from and how we move it forward. So again, we've worked on ourselves, and now what we want to do is start to move to the next place.
I want to bring people's attention to the comments, the chats. If they're not watching them while we're not mentioning everyone, there's some fantastic suggestions and things that people are doing in there. So,
Kath, would you like to highlight one or two, just because if you've seen them, there are a few that you might have liked that you wanted to bring?
Sure, they're going up to everyone. I think I just saw someone talk about sharing virtual mocktail cocktail hours with friends. And I watched a movie with a friend. We were both on the phone the other night. We watched the same movie and commented throughout. This has been a great opportunity to send notes, handwritten notes. There's nothing like getting a card in the mail, especially for a little kid. So send them to your own children if you want.
And I'm going to give the last one here. We're having virtual seders with our family and also with our synagogue community. So there's lots of ways of finding the way to be and to move things forward. Okay, so we started with a self, and now we're going to move to a kind of key piece of a culture of philanthropy. So as we have here the take care of yourself, the next level is shared responsibility for development. And then the third is strong donor relations. We're going to work on all three of these. And we're going to do that within the context of hearts and minds, of the wheel of change, including hearts and minds, structure, and behavior. And so we're going to hone in right now on this particular one, shared responsibility for development. So we're at a time when this crisis is giving us a chance to think about really important things and being intentional about what we really want and what really matters. So again, in the New York Times, article that I referred to before. It talks very specifically. This was the one by David Brooks that I mentioned previously. It's really about human connections making change going forward. And this article is very much about it. I recommend taking a look at it. It was last Sunday. We started this, looking inward, but now we have to start to look at the next pieces and how we move this to our organization. We're going to be using this basic cycle of fundraising. For those of you who are in development, this is super simplified. And for those of you who aren't, I think you'll see it's fairly basic. Basically, getting clear on the goals and the course of how to get there is the fundraising planning piece. Then identifying prospective donors. So recognizing the individuals who share your commitment and find out who they are and bringing them to your agency. Then cultivating engaging. So this is really about building the relationships with people and finding out what makes them tick and how they might want to be involved with what you are doing. Number four I have is enrolling. In some cases, you might know this to be the ask. Well, we use enrolling because it's about a partnership. It's about and asking somebody to invest their resources to advance your vision. And by the way, you might notice that's a little bit different language. That's part of our culture of philanthropy language, is people are investors who give their money to you. And in stewardship, the last of these five steps, the idea is to appreciate people and show them, frankly, that their investment was a good one, that it made a difference, okay? So what we want to do is we're going to go back to our breakout rooms in just a minute, and we're going to move from self-care to shared responsibility for development. So don't send us in there quite yet, Kath, but just one moment more. We know that fundraising can't succeed when it's up to one person or just a small group of development professionals. In a culture of philanthropy, everyone can have a role in development. From the van driver to the volunteer handing out food at the food bank, the executive director, the board member. So what we want to hear from you, we want to go into the breakout room, and it's a chance to share your thoughts within the group. And remember to use the parts of your organization. Remember board and other volunteers. What I want to know is what is happening? What's exciting? Here, I'm just going to go right back and put this on the screen here. What ways are individuals from different parts of your organization helping with development? So we want to hear, like, what is the board doing? What's the executive director doing? What are some of the behaviors or the structural changes or the attitude change that's happened within your organization? Welcome back, everybody. This is Lori. I'm back. I hope that you had some good insights. Let's just hear any of the facilitators want to highlight anybody doing some interesting and exciting things differently with various people participating in development.
This is Beth. One of the summer camps has a board member emeritus who has a 44-year history with the camp. And in this time, he has been reaching out to, because he holds so much history and so many relationships across the years of the organization, he personally has been calling hundreds of camp families to check in with them and see how they're doing and how their kids are doing. And it's been really well received and a really nice way for families who aren't sure whether their children will be able to go to camp this summer to stay connected and know that they're being thought of at this time. And that same camp is also having staff members who are who are young people in their 20s, who are providing all kinds of fun activities online for campers and their families, which is bringing joy and fun to kids who are trying to do school at home right now, which is a little bit of a drag sometimes. So those are all being really appreciated.
Great. Any other just burning shares? And then we're going to move to the next thing, because we have a whole bunch of suggestions and ideas for you.
Well, I'm going to throw out one that in addition to what we just heard from Beth about reaching out, the synagogue group that shared. But another idea, and I like this a lot, was staff holding Zoom events, sort of house parties, meet the staff, right? So people who are not typically on the front lines of development or donor relations, being the kind of guest of honor and sharing things that are going on for them and with the organization. So this may be an opportunity actually for getting to know you, getting to know people out there who you may not know in the organization.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for brainstorming and thinking about it. I'm hoping in this next section we can think about it per person. If our key thing is to have shared responsibility and development, there are lots of opportunities for people to be involved and to take things on. So the idea is have everybody work together. So as a board member, as a staff member, as a development person. And I'm going to just really, again, emphasize, remember that we want to use all of the hearts and minds, the behavior and the structures. And so I'm going to go role by role and give you some ideas of what we might suggest. So with regards to the hearts and minds, if you want to get yourself in a great space for your organization, repeated just about for every one of these, you want to get grounded and conscious of what you're grateful for. You want to pass out messages of gratitude to everybody around your organization, not just board, not just donors, but everybody, your volunteers, other community members, executive directors. Again, remember, think about behaviors. Get on the phone. I can't emphasize this enough. Start talking to people. Listen to them. If they ask about your organization, this is specifically with donors, by the way, ask them how it's going. It could be a stewardship call or it could be an ask. And we've had a number of people ask this question about when is it appropriate to ask. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit. Create a visionary video updating donors and other stakeholders on how things are going during the crisis. As the executive director, film a video. Let people know how it's going. If development systems are not in place, this is an opportunity for structures to get put together in a really positive way. Make a commitment now. If you want to make it the hearts and minds thing, promise it to your development people that that's what you'll be doing. Be certain the details from any connections you make get passed on to development. That's a very key structural thing you might want to do. By the way, you don't have to worry about copying these down. We have these as handouts and we'll make them available to you afterwards with a whole lot more people, more things on there too. Development. Again, start with yourself. Get grounded. Call your top donors, ask them how they're doing. See if you can do something to help make their day a little bit sweeter, right? Just like, by the way, in my group, they talked about sending personalized cards. That too is really powerful. Work with non-development staff and board members and ask them to call some people that they know. And again, capture the data and print postcards or blank notes for these folks and have these folks write cards. Create and utilize a compelling case for giving. It's now you should have a very strong case for giving. I know that there's two different categories of organizations that should be asking now, those that are directly related to this and those whose organizations are about to have, that are having challenging situations happen because of COVID. So make a compelling case for why. And structures. Take time to work on individual plans for your top donors and come up with a strategy for how to resolve things. If you're board members, start with yourself, get grounded, get great at talking about what the organization does and what a difference it makes. Get moved to tears. This is the hearts and minds and attitudes. Be inspiring talking about it. Again, start to connect with people in the community, but do it with the blessing of the development professional. So you don't want to be calling people that they don't know you're calling. When you call people, listen really well. Find out how they're doing. Make it a two-way street. If appropriate, don't shy away from asking. And with cards provided by development, write notes of appreciation and gratitude to the top donors. Let them know that their investment was a good investment in your organization. And lastly, establish mission moments at the start of every board meeting where you're hearing about what is great about the organization, a story, a narrative. And establish a culture of philanthropy committee. Use this as a way to have board members lead, not having the development person lead, but board members lead discussions that are enlightening and talk to and speak to development. How about donors? So notice, we have donors here. That's interesting. Why? Because donors are with you because they care, right? They really do care. They are wanting to be part of your agency. So let's make sure that they're at the table and they're helping right now. They're not just an ATM. They're committed. So if you're a donor and you're looking at this, and I bet a bunch of you could raise your hands right now and say that you're donors to an agency, if not your own, to multiple. I'm just saying not your own. If you're a staff on one, you might give to another. You might give to your own. So get good at describing the difference the organization makes and get moved to tears and start communicating it to others. Meet with the executive director and development professional to find out how you can be more useful. So step up as a donor and see how you might be more useful. And again, see what communications might be useful to be made for the agency. And as a donor, you might consider hosting a Jeffersonian dinner. That's a separate, that could be a whole separate course on how to do those. But you might want to do something, plan something post-COVID emergency, or you might want to do one online. A friend of mine suggested that there could be Jeffersonian dinners. Organize a group of volunteers to provide something needed for the agency. All right, program staff, get grounded, pass out gratitude generously. Look what might be possible as you think of your very best effort, what you might do in speaking about that and sharing that with people. Share connections in the community. These are behaviors now. What vendors do you know that might be helpful? What family members, donors, government agencies? Share those resources with the development staff and strategize with development on how to engage people. And get good at talking about the agency and the impact of your work. And start all your program, I love this one, start all your program staff meetings with a mission moment. Gather inspiring stories from your clients or your family members and save them. Share them with development. So really work on setting up a structure to capture great stories. Organize a group of volunteers to provide something needed by the agency. That's the next thing there.
There's a question on the chat about what is a Jeffersonian dinner? And thanks so much for that question. It's a dinner with about a dozen people that's hosted by your organization on a topic that relates to the work that you do. It's people who have different backgrounds and different perspectives coming together to talk about a topic or a theme that's related to the work that you do. It is not an ask. It is a way to build a relationship and to really deeply connect people about the issue areas that your organization addresses. And we can provide after this webinar more information how you can learn about Jeffersonian dinners. They're a great engagement tool.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Beth, for sharing that. Okay, so we've talked about taking care of yourself. We've talked about shared responsibility for development. Now we want to talk about strong donor relations. And again, we keep putting this wheel of change up here. That's an important piece as well. So as we look at this, are there ways that your organization has strengthened donor relations? What I'd like to do is actually not do a breakout room. I'm going to change it up right at the last second here. What I'd like to do instead is have everybody utilize your chat method. And what I'll do is I'm going to really hone in on it, and I'm going to throw some of these things out there as people are coming up with different ideas. So what are some of the things that you've been doing to strengthen donor relations, especially now?
I do think it's important to remember, folks, that, again, this is not necessarily about the asking. This is about the relationship, and knowing that even in difficult times where folks' income might have just stopped, there are certain things that people still can give, things that give them an opportunity. So to be clear in your messaging about both the primary, the secondary, the tertiary impact that your mission has had, some of the expenses that you might be facing, and put it out there in terms of transparency, and let the donor decide how they might be able to give, whether it's giving time, resources, or money.
Great. All right. And we have a few things that have come in. So personal thank you cards with artwork by our students sent to our board members. That's the folks of the Northampton Community Music School. I heard that also in my group. Sending calls to check in. Are they part of the organization? They are part of our organization's family of support. Sorry to be sticking my face in there like that. A video from the CEO, that's great. We're calling every member of our synagogue and asking how they are, how we can help. Can we call again next week? Giving them our numbers to call back. And we've gotten the out-of-school college kids to run errands for elderly and homebound. Great. We've asked donors who are supporting certain projects if they would transfer their support to operations as we navigate this new reality. Great. Emails with updates. Perfect. At GCC, we're reaching out to donors to ask them how they're doing. We have decided to not ask at this time. We've sent a message out to how NEF is responding to the current situation, appreciating our teachers and schools, and making clear that we'll continue to be there for them in this current situation. We're making thank you calls to all donors who donated since March 13th. That's awesome. And we're setting up gatherings of alums, which are also donors. Stopped now. Sorry, Bruce, I'm not clear what that means. We are setting up gatherings of alums, which are also donors.
This was an action that stopped because obviously we can't bring alum together.
Got it. But
we can communicate with them and let them know what's going on.
Great. We were setting up gatherings. Okay, got it. That was it. All right. Great. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to turn this over to Eric, and he's going to talk a little bit about some of the things that that we make recommendations to consider to build strong donor relations, especially now. Eric?
So you've obviously been hearing some of the suggestions in both the breakout groups and what we just went through in the chat, but here's some that we also talked about in the article that we sent out to folks. You're hearing a lot of this. I think it's really important to stay connected and increase your communication. One of the things we know is that we tend to want to back off at this time, at least initially. And it's challenging, but we recommend that you lean into increasing communication rather than decreasing it. It can feel like there's a flood of emails in your inbox, but be one of those that are communicating. Don't go radio silent. We said go small to have a big impact. Now, again, we thought about this in terms of you can't have your big fundraiser, can you have a small gathering? But I think small now is the intimacy, frankly, of as close as we can get, which is video calling. And we've been hearing some suggestions around that, the small gathering of staff, et cetera. But are there opportunities to, again, stay small on the phone and have a big impact in terms of relationship building? So we talked in the group very early on, early March in Rainmaker, we were talking about how we needed to think about the past and think about the long term and stay cool. In other words, there's a lot of fear and there's a lot of challenge and there's a lot of panic. And in fact, each one of us in Rainmaker have gone through our own phases of grief and challenge around this. So we know that it's important, but one of the things that's key is to stay calm, be a calming presence in your community as best you can. We talked earlier about spreading good news, and eventually and very soon you'll have positive news to share within your organization, positive stories of impact. The other thing we know is that there will be a dip, and we need to, again, face that. In 2008, there was a 6% reduction, and it was a recovery that took a couple of years, but the organizations that stayed in it and stayed calm came out ahead at the end. They did not fold. Communicate clearly. This is, well, you know, sometimes we say we put the duh in fundraising. Put the duh in your communications. Make sure you're really saying what you mean. Be succinct. I'm finding that brevity is definitely the soul of wit, so be brief. We talked about this as an important key to be genuinely relevant. If you are serving healthcare workers, if you are dealing with food scarcity, if there's a real relevancy, you can put that up front. I have learned the hard way that if you don't try to align yourself with this. Be yourselves and say, this is having an impact on our organization in lots of different ways. This is how we're responding. But if there's a relevant application, put it in there. And be genuine. You know, be genuine about your fears and your openness. Maintain the structures that support culture of philanthropy. We heard that in terms of structure. If you don't have them, build them. This is a great time, working with several clients right now, to clean up the database, right? It's that back burner project that you can put on the forefront. And ask. We get a lot of questions around this. It is important to ask for support. We believe that there are people who, not only do we believe it, it's happening. People are stepping up. Their generosity may be their time. It may not be their cash. But it's okay to ask for support and continued support in the time of crisis. You need to use the discretion of your organization to think about when that time will be appropriate. And for some folks, they're putting things on hold, and some folks are moving it right through. I just want to remind everyone, this is some pretty fine print here, we'll send it out, but right now the Community Foundation of Western Mass, the Boston Foundation, several other organizations have immediate COVID funds. There are state funds available. You can think about, without being opportunistic, will there be people getting benefit from this stimulus who may want to contribute it to your organization? If they want to buy a washer dryer, maybe they want to contribute to your food bank. Okay. And we also know that it's really important to be sensitive around the conversations you're having. I spoke to a colleague recently who's in planned giving. It may not be the appropriate time to remind them about their legacy giving at the time they're facing their health crisis. At the same time, to be really good stewards and relationship builders at all times. It's part of the work that we believe is really critical to building a culture of philanthropy.
Yeah, and I'm just going to add with the slide that we've just put up there. This is from the folks at the Veritas Group. And by the way, if you don't already subscribe to their e-newsletter, it's fantastic. They have a lot of really good resources there. They brought this out about how the stimulus bill really helps your donors to be able to be philanthropic. So if your concern is that nobody has money right now, it's not really true. So again, you know, I agree completely with Eric. You've got to look at whether it is the right time for your organization. But again, I would emphasize two pieces of this. One is if your work directly impacts COVID, you know, if it's directly about that, absolutely you should be asking. And number two, if your organization is one that is getting harmed deeply by COVID, then I think it's a time for your supporters to understand that. It is probably not a good time to try to get new donors, but for those that are already your supporters, you want to be reinforcing and, you know, doing that stewarding that I have mentioned numerous times today. And B, I think that they want to be there for you. They are, they're in it with you. They are your partners, and really remember that as a key thing. Are there any questions right now before we just get to the very, we're kind of at the wrap up just now.
Lori, this is Kathleen. I have a moment I wanted to share.
Yeah.
So I want to give credence to that. We, as a family, my spouse and I have talked about, we are privileged in terms of our finances. And while, yes, we took a hit in the stock market and made some adjustments, we are going to get some money from this stimulus. And we have made a decision that money will go out to the groups that we support. And so that's a conversation that we had. And I think we're not the only ones that are having it about that particular chunk of money that's coming to us.
Great. Thank you, Kath, for sharing that. Okay, I am going to move us to just really look at this. As we wrap up this part, and we're going to wrap up and then leave time for Q&A that we'll be happy to do for up to a half an hour, actually. But I really suggest that you take a look at what you will do to strengthen your organization, and really use this as a time to build a strong foundation of a culture of philanthropy. I like to look at those three pieces of the bucket like this, that if we're looking at hearts and minds, what are the conversations that we either need to stop, start, or continue? So continue is important because, like, we got this right. We're going to keep going this direction. But we need to stop doing that. That's not actually proactive, right? Or as an individual, I might need to stop whining to everybody if I'm feeling distressed. I might need to go find somebody that'll listen to me, let me whine, and come up with a more empowering interpretation, right? So that's the hearts and minds piece. So looking at what conversations need to stop, start, or continue. What behaviors, so this is the behaviors part, obviously, need to stop, start, and continue. So that's sort of like a wake up, but this is back to that we know that you know what there is to do, right? So don't abandon what you've been doing that's working. If there are things that you need to do, don't, like, get yourself out of being frozen if that's where you are, and do those things that you know work. Build those relationships. And what structures need to be put into place, taken down, or do we need to continue to use? So that's a good way to think through and be present to all of the hearts and minds pieces. So my recommendation is that you go to those and you think about those as you build an intention. We want you to be able to answer, ask any questions you have. I guess one thing, just the last thing I'd like to do before we do that is, would anybody like to share? And you can just say, you know, Lori, I've got something to share, and I'll call on you. Take yourself off of mute. If there's anything you want to share about any insights that you've had today out of this session, it would be great to hear if anybody had any, like, I'm going to take that away and go do that.
I would like to share that we've actually been getting a lot of donors who have not donated with us in many years coming back to donating with us, as well as a lot of new donors too. Just seeing the need in the community, people are coming back to the fold.
Great. Thank you, Amy. That's great to share, because I think a lot of people, like Kath just said, you know, are sort of reflecting on what it is that, you know, is important to them.
I wanted to give a couple of ideas of pivoting that came just through our breakout room. The idea that if you have an event and you can't have the event now, and you've always wanted to build a major donor program, well, here's your opportunity to use the format of the event through your table hosts and other ways and break it out into personal connections to those donors. So I think the opportunity also came up of, wow, our mission has never been more important. It's just looked at in a different lens. So again, having those conversations with your staff, with your board, with your program people, especially, of where the mission is shining right now in the time of a crisis, and then clearly communicate your needs. Let your donors decide whether they are going to give or not.
William has raised his hand. So William, if you unmute yourself, please share.
Yeah, thank you. One thought that occurred to me that our organization could use, not the short term, which you've been talking about, but more the midterm. I'm imagining that there will be financial hits to donors in the midterm, in terms of the stock market and how flush extra cash they feel like they have. So if we had some data available, what the projections are that from the financial experts, and how that will actually, affect donations in the midterm, like 1 to 2 year window before things start to recover, that would help all of us plan cash flow maybe better from donors.
This is Lori, and I froze up for a few seconds there, and so I missed the question. I don't know if anybody, was that a question, or Eric, Beth, or David, do you want to respond?
If I could paraphrase, Bill, thanks for sharing from a perspective of a graduate school or really any organization. The question was, there's the short term, the midterm, and the long term. So do we have any information on midterm, 1 to 2 year projections of the economy and how it might ripple across to the organization? I mean, I think part of it is looking to the past. So looking at 9/11, looking at the 2008 stock market crash, seeing where you know, what we can learn from that. And it's a whole new world. So the uncertainty is uncertain. And in many ways, it's very hard to project how this is going to ripple across. I just read an article that the whole world economy is going to shift. And so America, US has always been a lot higher. And in the adjustment in the last 2 years, we're going to go a lot lower to balance out with the rest of the world's economy. We don't know.
Thank you, David. And thank you, William, for the question. Mary, I believe, raised her hand. Mary, did you want to ask a question? And by the way, there was a request, and I think it's a good one. As you introduce yourself, let us know what organization you're with. So, Mary?
Yes. I'm Mary Robness, and I'm on the board at a library, the Storrs Library in Longmeadow. The thing that I'm taking away from this is the importance for our website to stay connected with the patrons of the library. Part of the culture of philanthropy to make patrons know, or just show them that we care about people who are using the library all the time and be a resource for them in this isolated time.
Yes, and so it was a little difficult to hear you, so I'm gonna just say it back to everybody that what I got that you heard was that one of the things you got out of this was the importance of keeping your website live. This is Mary is with the Storrs Library in Longmeadow, Massachusetts, and that the importance of connecting with patrons as a piece of a culture of philanthropy. Did I get that right, Mary?
That's right on. Sorry, I was too quiet.
That's okay. All right, good. So I think we should just open it up to questions now. If anybody has any specific questions, I know a few people had asked about asking. I don't know if that's the question you want to go deeper into at this point or if we answered that already. So does anybody have a question that they'd like to ask? If so, just go ahead and take yourself off mute and I'll call on you. Just say, Lori, I have a question, and I'll call on you.
Also, Abby, you have had your hand up for a little while, so if you wanted to jump in at this point, feel free to unmute yourself.
Yes, please.
What I wanted to say in regard to something one of the people said a minute ago, this is also a great time to do a deep dive in finding out about your top donors. Find out what they do. Find out what they're interested in. It's amazing what Google can teach you. Go beyond the first page. You'll learn lots about your donors, and that will help you craft ways to approach them and how to get them engaged. Thanks.
Thanks, Abby. Abby is Abby von Schlegel with the consulting firm by that name. So thanks, Abby, for being here. It's great having you. I saw Roger also raised his hand.
Yes. Hi, Lori. Hi, everybody. It's Roger Sorkin from the American Resilience Project. Very small nonprofit that makes films for educational and advocacy purposes. You know, I'm curious about help for artists. I know it's not exactly related to this call, but I wonder if anybody has any thoughts on sort of navigating through the Mass Cultural Council. My wife, who's also an artist, we've been exploring, looking, and I am, my organization is a nonprofit, so I have always received my funds through that mechanism. But does anyone have any insight into how we can sort of get in line and where those lines might be? Because we're really sort of flying blind here as we try to seek help for classes that have been canceled and other foreseeable income that's been canceled for us in the foreseeable future.
I'd like to chime in. This is Jason from the Northampton Community Music Center. Everyone can hear me, right?
Yes.
Okay. So there is a really, really great blog that is that Mass Creative is updating on a regular basis with links to a lot of the information you're talking about. I really recommend checking that out. As a matter of fact, what I'll do is I'll get the link and I'll put it in the chat box.
Great.
I might also add that one of the things, Jason, you shared earlier is there's no better time for the performing arts to recognize their importance in our lives. As you see video streams of tremendous performances and sharing, it's a matter of shifting. A couple of ideas that I've seen from performing arts. First of all, there is the unemployment, and their nonprofits are available for some of the recovery packages. So don't be shy for asking for help for your employees and the loss of income. The other idea is the idea of a farm share, if you will, or a futures. So I can't go to a performance right now, but I'm going to buy a ticket for my community theater so I could cash it in the future. The idea that Kathleen, every donor is thinking, how can they help? And if you're not communicating and you're not out there connecting to your donors, giving them opportunities to help, that's going to be key. So being creative, recognizing that it's central to the mission if you're a performing artist right now, and that you are taking a big hit. So be clear with folks of what the extent of your loss is now and in the midterm.
Could I also add something? And I know this isn't, I think Roger's question originally wasn't necessarily about, well, sounded like, I don't know what degree it's about performance art or not about performance art. But I really believe that that having people have a touch of what it is that you do is a great relief from challenging times. If it's not performance and it's a visual, then, a touch of a visual at these different times. And the more intimate the gatherings, the better. And as somebody who has put on a lot of events in the past, I had an interesting kind of two-piece thing happen. One was free concerts that were being put on by Signature Psalms that I started watching at my home, which were unbelievable. They still are. I haven't been to every single one. But then they gave an opportunity for people to give online to any amount that they want. And my guess is that they did incredibly. And then I went to another website, another place, and they had that you had to prepay to be on the service. And so what you had to pay was $5. Well, I spent $20 on each of the other Signature Sound shows, but I felt like I had paid my ticket price with the $5, not to mention their sound wasn't very good. So get it right. If you're going to have people see what it is that you're doing, try to do that. And I'd say instead of charging tickets for it, have people be moved to tears and to go from there.
And this is Michelle. Work with an organization called Spark Kindness in Metro West Mass. Just curious, I'm assuming most folks are thinking about their asking being done over through social media channels and e-communication versus print. But there was a lot of talk about mailing cards and postcards and that sort of thing. So I'm just curious if folks who might have had appeals planned are investing in doing any snail mailing and what kind of, there's a lot of noise out there. There's a lot of great noise out there, but it's very hard to cut through it. And I'm just curious what strategies you'd suggest or that people are using if they are asking right now to get that attention from their donor base.
So I'll take one stab, but I want others to as well. My first stab at it is pick up the phone. Now, that's not a big, you're not going to hit thousands of people that way. But I would say as intimate as possible is the best way to do it. So that's my first step. Now, somebody with a little more social media perspective want to jump in?
This is Mitch Anthony calling from Greenfield, Mass. My day job is the communications consultant. And last year, I did a major project with a nonprofit fundraising agency in DC. They have mid-level clients like the San Diego Zoo and the Smithsonian. But their numbers show consistently, and what they have a very hard time convincing their clients of is that what works is print and digital in harmony. I'm not disputing your point, Lori, that the more intimate, the better. But if you are looking for a broader reach, print and digital work exceptionally well together. And when their clients drop print from their mix and rely only on digital, their response rates go way down.
Great. Thanks very much.
This is Eric. I'm just going to say that, my philosophy, Michelle, on postcards, I'm still sending them. I'm cleaning them and I'm putting them in plastic bags for the post office, but there is still an intimacy and a cutting through the digital by saying, this is for you individually.
This is Beth. A couple of things. Really appreciate you weighing in on that digital versus hard copy, Mitch. Somebody mentioned in the chat, a lot of people don't answer their phone anymore, especially if they don't recognize the number. That doesn't mean you can't leave a message that thanks people, lets them know that you're checking in on them, that you hope they and their families are well, and that you consider them part of your organization's family of support and are thinking about them at this time. Also, there's an issue, especially I think for those of us who are professionals who are raising children and have children at home who are now out of school, who are needing to parent during the workday and try to work. And so the issue of self-care can become much more challenging when you are needing to feed and care for and entertain and spend time with children and help them stay focused perhaps on their school. And so that can be a really challenging element. One of the things we wanted to propose to people is the opportunity for us to do some cohort support in the weeks and months ahead. So if there's a group of parents who are professionals who are working, who would like to set up some kind of regular Zoom meeting through Rainmaker, we could arrange that so you can have specific support to that. If there's a particular, or if people just want to be able to gather to check in with each other and get support and hear how it's going, we're very open to creating that kind of community support in the weeks and months ahead. So we wanted to just let you know that, and that we really, those of you who are parenting and working from home, really recognize the challenge and the balance of self-care that that brings.
So I guess I want to throw out a last question to all of you, and Beth led us there really, is what is it that you need from us? What could we provide for you going forward that would be helpful?
My name is Liz, and I work in food justice and food access in Springfield. And you know, what I know about people who do the kind of work that we do, whether it be in the arts or in the environment, or no matter the space that you're in, that we're people of passion who care deeply. And so I want to ask you, and particularly for those of us who are parenting, you know, I'm working in a space where people literally are hungry and we don't have enough resources or ways of getting food to them. And so the two organizations I'm a part of, we are thinking really creatively, and I am leaning with my whole heart and whole self into the ask, and am finding that those who I ask are leaning in with me as well. And so I encourage you to do that for your own spaces that you work in, but also to think about spaces that you might not in the course of your day think about. I would imagine that many of you are philanthropic. So as you write your check to whatever organizations you write to, think about another organization that may be working in a space different from those you traditionally support. And don't just write the check, send out an intention for those people that are doing the work, for the communities that they serve, for the particular area, if it's food. We all want everybody to have enough food. So think about a specific intention you can put out in the world, whether you can write a check or not. And even if your check is $5, write it. Even if it's looking at the non-perishable food in your pantry and recognizing, I am never going to eat 27 cans of water-packed tuna. I can put 10 in a bag and drop them off somewhere. Let's just think about the places that we can give. When you're with your kids and you're thinking about writing these letters, begin to ask them about the things that they're worried about in the world and what are the positive thoughts your family might be able to put out in the world. If you grow food, can you put a tomato plant in a bucket and leave it on someone's step who you think might not know how to grow, with a note from your neighbor, and here's how you take care of this? Just take a moment to think differently about the possibilities for your life, because we need money. But as Mitch said earlier in our breakout session, we need a shift. And while I'm not optimistic being an emerging elder in my community about how big that shift might be, I am always optimistic about individuals. And while systems are whack in our country, people hold up systems and people can dismantle them. And I'm not talking about like running through the streets yelling revolution. I mean, think about your particular thing that you might be able to do, because what we will get back will abound and expand. And so, yeah, that's what I want to say.
Great. That was awesome. I want to read something and then Shoshana will have come up next. Michelle said this. Thank you, Liz. This is from one of my organizations, Spark Kindness. The recent newsletter, widen your circle of empathy. It's easier to have empathy for people who look like us, talk like us, and believe as we do. Kindness challenges us to widen our circle of empathy to include people who may be very different from us and therefore outside our radar of concern in our daily lives. And there's a link that she has included there.
So yes, I found that very inspiring. And also it made me think about, just in regards to your question about what you can do for us or what we can do for each other moving forward. And I was thinking about on NPR now, they're doing their ask in collaboration with an ask for, I can't remember if it's medical supplies or a food bank, but just thinking in terms of my work specifically, we make puppet theater and I'm struggling with how I value that right now in regards to people who really need food, but how an organization that opens people's hearts and engages families and engages could help another organization and could bring people in, both organizations could bring people in. So I wonder if there's a way that initiatives can get paired like that for mutual fundraising and mutual support in a way that would benefit both, that a performance entity or a filmmaking entity and an art entity of some scope can work together with a social justice entity to bring in supplies and support that arts organization.
That's great, Shoshana. I love the thinking of everybody on this call right now. It's a really neat thing to imagine collaboration and connection of different agencies in support of each other and to benefit both. And I do remember many years ago when we first started talking about a culture of philanthropy, Kathleen and I were actually on a webinar like this many, many years ago now. And we talked about, with regard to her mission, something awful, like how can my, you know, silly arts organization make any difference when there are people that are dying? You know, she said something like that. And we just all sort of took a moment to think about how dull life would be without beauty and arts, and that it really is a vehicle for possibility. And I just love the idea of having those of you who are in the room and are sources of that, really connecting, putting things, together in such a way that is more powerful and more meaningful and has an even greater opportunity. Beth, did you want to add something?
I just wanted to thank everybody for joining us this morning. It's been really a gift to be with you, and thank you for sharing your wisdom and your expertise and your creativity and your passion for this work. We really look forward to hearing what you need or want from us, and we will send you resources by email after this webinar, and we will probably also request your feedback on the webinar so we can continue to improve the work that we're doing through virtual outreach. Is there anything else you wanted to say to any of my fellow Rainmakers as we wrap up?
Thank you. You're welcome. It's been really a pleasure.
Thank you
for coming. And being a part of this. And yes, really think about how we might be useful. Feel free to reach out to us. We are all, our email addresses are all our first name, David, Eric, Beth, Lori, Christine, Kathleen, at rainmkr.com. And I encourage you to reach out to us individually. Please sign up for our e-newsletter. We have a bunch of workshops that are coming up, and who knows whether they will be like this or whether they'll be in person. But we hope that you'll join us and spread the news about what we're talking about in building a culture of philanthropy. Go do your good work. You know it. You've got this. You have what it takes. Thank you for being part of this. And we're going to sign off at this point. So everybody take yourself off of mute and say goodbye to each other.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone.
Great program.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Goodbye. Thank you.
Get outside. Enjoy the sunshine.
Yep.
Yeah.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.